This is Florida Matters. I'm Steve Newborn. Brian Butler is a former Army officer, president and CEO of his own Tampa company, and is African American. That last definition has defined much of his life, including being stopped several times for no reason other than the color of his skin. He was moved to write an opinion piece in the Tampa Bay Times in the wake of riots after George Floyd was killed by a Minneapolis police officer. Now, the first question I have for you is, you know, a lot of people have been really amazed at the intensity of the demonstrations that have rippled through the country in the wake of George Floyd being killed at the knee of a police officer in Minneapolis. Does this intensity and the widespreadness of the response surprise you at all?
No, actually, Steve, it does not surprise me. People are tired. And there's been indications over the last, you know, couple years, as we've seen so many episodes explode across the country, that people are generally tired. And while much of the frustration is directed at our local law enforcement agencies, it's really, in my opinion, it goes well beyond that tiredness.
When you say it goes well beyond this, have you been personally affected by this? I mean, to look at you, you're a successful business leader, retired officer, that sort of thing, and you obviously have a certain gravitas about you. Have you had any run-ins personally that you can tell us about?
Yeah, I think that people of color, African Americans, often experience different types of biases in their normal everyday life. You know, if you and I were to walk into a high-end department store, and you went in one door and I went in the other, there's a greater chance that some undercover security person is going to follow me around than follow you. There's a greater chance that if you and I were both doing the same thing, that the cameras in the store would pick up on me well before they picked up on you. If you and I were stopped by law enforcement and we both were doing 12 miles over, there's just a greater chance that I'd get a ticket and you won't. And those biases and unconscious biases that many carry with them every day affect decisions they make that affect others. And those are just things that many people live with every day. How they look, how long is their hair, the things that they wear, you know, whether they're represented in a boardroom, whether their viewpoints are represented. When people don't understand things, they tend to fear them. And because people fear those things, they tend to not want to let go, or they tend to not really appreciate or want to be a part of change to help things get better, mainly out of fear.
You just mentioned a lack of understanding. Do you think that you, even after all this time that has elapsed since the civil rights movement really got underway in the 50s, that there is still a lack of understanding between groups in this country? Or is it getting any better here? Maybe I'm groping for some optimism here.
Yeah, I do think it's better. It's much better. But we're still not there. We're a long way from being there. Because there is truly a lack of understanding. See, my parents fought in the civil rights movement. You know, they're part of sit-ins. They're part of integrating basic activities for little brown kids down in South Florida, little black kids down in South Florida. My mom was at the March on Washington in 1963. She took the Freedom Train there. But for her to have a conversation with her grandkids today, the same conversation that she had with me and my siblings 45 years ago, close to 50 years ago, you tell me. Are things changing?
So it sounds like there's this pent-up energy that has not been released. It hasn't found an outlet. There has been a lot of talk, but little action. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Some things have changed. You know, I wouldn't be a CEO today of the company I am had not my parents and so many others helped push us through the civil rights movement. There's more African Americans getting higher education. There's more African Americans getting better paid job. But they're typically smaller numbers when you look at the whole of the population. So while there's been dribbles of change, I just think there's so much more that we can do as a nation. And we owe it to our grandkids and your grandkids to do that.
You wrote in your op-ed that it happened during high school in Palm Beach County when you went to school in South Florida. And this racism happened also in college. Give me some personal examples of what you had to go through.
Yeah. And you know what? I highlighted me because I just wanted to get the conversation started. But I've had dozens on top of dozens, if not hundreds, of texts and emails from others saying the same thing happened to me or something very similar happened to me. You know, one of the times that I was stopped in high school, actually, I had just come back from my freshman year of college and I picked up my best friend from the bus station. He was coming home from college as well. And so my car was filled with his clothes and his suitcases and his boxes and everything. Because like me, we were just coming home from college. And the policeman took that as we had broken in and stolen something from somewhere. So we were both detained about, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning for an extended period of time in Lake Park, Florida, just because we're driving a nice car late at night and we have boxes. Two young kids just finished up their freshman years in college.
You had a very interesting passage in your op-ed that you wrote about your experiences when you were an Army captain and you were in Georgia and you got pulled over. Could you just, reach back there and give us a picture of what happened to you then?
New truck, headed down the Tallahassee area, go spend Thanksgiving with my family. I just headed on a hunting trip and go down to some hunting and fishing for a couple days. And I was speeding. Be the first to admit I was speeding. Listened to the music late in the evening and it was raining. And I passed a police officer. We passed each other. He turned. I started looking for a place to pull over because I knew I was speeding. I found a place to pull off and he approached me like I shared with my son. Roll the window down, put your hands up on the steering wheel because I knew I needed to do that. And when he got to the car, his gun was pulled and he literally had it in my face. And he was screaming and he tried to, his point was I was trying to get away from him, which was just ridiculous.
What was he screaming at you?
Get out of the car, put your hands up, but he's got a weapon, his weapon drawn. And I'm asking him, why is his weapon drawn? And, he's yelling, I'm yelling, but I never moved my hands from the steering wheel. And as I got out of the car, he spread my legs and pushed my head down onto the hood. And I'm still yelling. And by the end, there's a couple more cops there. And then a supervisor pulls up. And as the supervisor pulls up, I guess one of the cops was talking to him and he came over and he just immediately de-escalated the situation. Immediately. But I think about what may have happened had the supervisor not pulled up.
And you told him you were an Army officer too, right? Did that get any kind of response?
Yeah. Repeatedly. None at all. Repeatedly.
So that kind of thing has to stick with you for a very long time, I imagine.
Yeah, how could it not? But I could have carried that with me and been bitter for the rest, until today, but I chose not to. I chose to take it as a learning point and, and put myself in position to help others, one, not be caught in that situation, and two, to help talk about tough issues so that maybe with my son or somebody else's son, that would never happen. But we saw what happened last week.
Do you have any bitterness from these experiences? You don't sound like a bitter person. You sound, just from your tone, you sound like somebody who's prone to more forgiveness than bitterness. But, there's got to be some kind of bitter feelings left over from all this. Do you feel that way at all?
I don't have time to be bitter. If I chose to be bitter, it would likely get in the way of the things that I believe are the most important. So I think we all have to make decisions. I think there's a lot of bitter people out there right now, and I understand why. But I'd rather be a part of the solution and help advance the ball forward for the next generation of kids, for my kids and my one day grandkids. So I refuse to settle and be bitter.
What do you tell your kids? I mean, are you having the same conversation that your daddy and granddaddy had many years ago, too?
Unfortunately, I have to have the same conversation. I have a 28-year-old son. So unfortunately, last night I had to call and check on him, make sure he was home. He doesn't live with me, he lives on his own. Unfortunately, I have to remind him that if you get stopped, please put your hands on the top of the steering wheel and roll your window down and don't make any sudden movements. My son's probably tired of me talking about that, but I don't think I ever will, because I watch what happens across the country when so many young African-American men get stopped.
What was your feelings when you saw the video of George Floyd being basically killed by a police officer with his knee? I mean, that must have been a visceral reaction on your part.
The first time I saw it, I had to get up and walk away. I couldn't believe it. I watched it several times, and it was probably several days before I can sit and watch the whole, I think, almost 10 minutes of the video. I just couldn't do it. To watch a man in our country almost willingly take the life of another man over something as benign as, you know, what he wasn't even charged with, just doesn't make sense to me. I'm having a tough time really understanding it. And I know so many others are. And that's why I believe we're seeing communities react. Because people are having a very, very tough time understanding it. And many of them are just tired of the conversation, because in their world, things aren't moving forward. They aren't getting better.
It seems like this is a recurring theme here. You wrote in your op-ed, "We have seen this movie before. Eric Garner in New York, Walter Scott in South Carolina, Oscar Grant in North Carolina, Amadou Diallo in New York, Manuel Loggins Jr., Ronald Madison, Sean Bell, Michael Brown, Alton Sterling. The names go on and on." They say that civil rights is the unfinished business of America. Do you think that work will ever be completed?
I'm optimistic that it will be. I'm optimistic that the work that my parents did and so many others across this nation, and I mean so many others, both black and white, did across this nation to help bring to light some of the terrible things that happened to people prior to the civil rights movement and during the civil rights movement, that they did enough to move the ball forward. But I like to believe that many of them thought at this point, you know, some 50 years later, that we would not be having the same discussion. But yet, we are.
You know, a lot of the demonstrations have unfortunately taken a violent tack. Some people claim these are outside agitators, to use a phrase from, I swear it sounds like 1968 again, when you say that phrase. Do you believe that these demonstrations have been essentially hijacked by outside people, or are the concerns legitimate enough that you believe that these actions are just an outgrowth, you know, some way to let the steam out of the kettle, so to speak?
Yeah, so I choose to look at it slightly differently. I choose to approach this from the standpoint of, if and when we stop treating people unfairly, we will likely not give people a reason to protest. But we know what happens once protests start. Other factors get involved. People's emotions get in the way, whether it's on the law enforcement side or the individual citizen side. Things sometimes spiral out of control because of frustration and fear. But why do we continue to put ourselves as a nation in this place to begin with?
What message do you have to the demonstrators out there to hopefully keep it peaceful? Do you think that those words would fall on deaf ears, or is that a hopeful outcome of all this?
I like to compare it to a boxing ring. You know, you got two boxers in the ring. They're going at it. Now is not the time to teach them how to box. They're in the fight. At best, you can do is yell a few basic things from the sidelines, because until the bell rings, they're in the fight. So in my mind, we have to create dialogue, candid conversation and discussion well before the first bell rings.
Hasn't that already been happening, though? Haven't we talked and talked? This has happened so many times before from these other people that you mentioned that have already died. You know, it makes me wonder whether any more talk is going to make any difference.
We have to address disparities. We have to address healthcare disparities. We have to address education disparities, economic disparities, food disparities, housing disparities, and not just talk. Because it's, and you're right, it's not just talk. We have to do something. We have to show people that we are getting things done. And we're in this together, working to uplift our communities.
Well, Brian, I'd like to ask you what kind of message you would have for the police officers out there that are dealing with this at all. You're a former Army officer. You've dealt with security. You know what it's like on the other side of the line, so to speak. What's your feelings really about the way that police are handling all these demonstrations that we're seeing out there?
Most of the demonstrations that I'm witnessing on television, the police seem to be handling with a lot of calm and a lot of patience. And, you know, I firmly believe that 95-98% of those law enforcement officers are being great at what they do. They're doing their jobs every day. They're not treating people unfairly. It's that small percentage of law enforcement officers that have put their brothers in blue in this situation that has led to these riots across the nation.
And do you feel there's any kind of solution at hand, maybe better training, more community policing, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I believe it's better training, but I believe it's better and more focused policies on use of force. If you look at five different police stations, even in our state, you'd probably come up with five different individual policies on how use of force rules will be applied. So I think until we standardize use of force across the country and we create better opportunities for training, mandatory training for our law enforcement, we're going to continue to see some of these challenges.
Brian, do you have any further thoughts you'd like to share with us? Any advice you can give to people out there?
I encourage people to try to have meaningful conversation. I encourage people to listen intently. Nobody wants your sympathy. They want to know that things are being done, that this is important to not just black people or black men, but this is important to everybody. And I think until we get to that point, we're going to continue to see things such as this flare up.
Well, hopefully we won't have to have this conversation again in the near future, keeping our fingers crossed.
And saying a lot of prayers.
All right. Brian Butler is president and CEO of Vistra Communications based in Tampa. Brian, thanks so much for telling us about your experiences. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. And thanks for all you do and using your platform in a way that it truly makes a difference in the lives of others.
The outrage that has engulfed cities throughout the country in the wake of the death of George Floyd has some comparing it to the riots after the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was slain in 1968. The pent-up anger of many people of all races, is evident in the voices of some of the people who were peacefully protesting this weekend in Tampa. Here's a few of them.
To have a grown man subdued and submissive and crying for his mother, that's one of those things when you realize that you're trying to break down the spirit of the people, you know, and that's what that does. And those images have been cast way too many times for way too many generations. And so in seeing that people are enough, because we know that we come from greatness, we have the same rights that everyone else does, and there's no reason why we should be treated in such an inhumane way where we can watch one of our brethren. And I think every mother across the country, their heart broke when they heard him scream out, cry out, Mom.
Really upset about the injustice that's been going on in our society for centuries, honestly. And I felt like I needed to use my white privilege to make a statement and make a stand. White privilege is an invisible thing to a lot of us unless you're aware of it, but it's just built into our systems that we can just live our lives easier than a lot of other communities.
You know, we have had enough. I compare it to when like a pressure cooker is on the stove and the lid is locked, and then, you know, when the contents and the steam and the pressure has nowhere to go, that lid is going to blow off. And that is essentially what's happened in this country, is the lid has blown off of everything. And now it's just a matter of getting the kitchen cleaned up. I feel like our president is the type of person to, instead of going in the kitchen, getting on his hands and knees and cleaning it up, he's just gonna buy a new house and, you know, walk away from the mess. And I hope that is not what's gonna happen.
The fear of coming out for a normal, like an everyday person to come out here and be afraid of tear gas or rubber bullets, etc., that you hear on the news, that's a fear that these people have every single day of their lives, whether it be you're stopped by a cop or walking in a store. So for us to put that fear aside and come out and stand together and say that it's okay means the world to everybody.
I think we need to show up in numbers. I think so often we do protests online, we do the hashtags, we're visible but we're not seen, and we don't really see the type of support that we have. And so to come out here and you have such a diverse group of people out here, it's very important that you see who supports you, you see who's supporting the movement. It's very important that you show in numbers, in mass, what this means to people, because the data on the internet isn't properly reflected, and you just have to make sure that people understand that it's a lot more than just Black people that are supporting this. It's a lot more than Hispanics that are out here supporting this. It's everybody, and everybody feels the pain that Black people feel in this.
Those were the voices of Shakira Parker of Tampa, Kelsey of St. Petersburg, Cam Parker of Tampa, Lacey from Tampa, and Robin of Riverview. Several didn't want to give out their last names. Their voices were recorded by WUSF multimedia reporter Delina Miller. Delina, tell me about the mood of the crowds you witnessed, and what was the main message they were trying to get across?
Sure. So I was out at Cypress Green Park in East Tampa on Sunday, and most of the protesters there were just trying to convey their grief and their anger over the killing of George Floyd and others by police in recent months. Most of the people who were at this particular protest that I talked to were against some of the more extreme ends of protesting for some people, were be lumped in with the rioting and whatnot. Many of them said that most of the people associated with burning down Champs Sports Store in Tampa and some of the vandalism that happened were not associated with the daytime protests and events that were happening. So there was a lot of frustration with that and a lot of conflicting feelings on everything else that was happening. But the people that were there Sunday were really trying to express their grief and their anger over a system that they feel is oppressing them. And so most of the people I spoke to just wanted to meet up in solidarity, especially during a time where most of us have been at home for a few months because of the coronavirus pandemic. And so it's a lot harder to feel that sense of community online, even with the hashtags and the video messages and the TikTok platform. So they wanted to get together in person as safely as possible for everybody to feel this sense of solidarity and community in a way that you really can't do online. Most of the people were wearing masks. Most of the people were trying to be as safe as possible. It's not really easy to social distance for this type of demonstration, but people were handing out water. People were handing out masks. People were stationed around as medics. So everybody was trying to do their best to balance what we need to do to be safe with the coronavirus and also what we need to do to be safe when it comes to institutionalized racism, because public health experts have said racism is just as much of a hazard to our health as the coronavirus is, if not more so.
The sense I'm getting from most of the stories that I've been reading and the video footage that I've been seeing is a sense of frustration, a lack of progress despite all the talk that's been done over the going decades now. Is that what you sensed, or was there kind of a more hopeful note, at least in the daytime protests?
I think it was both. I think it was both frustration and hope, sort of that idea of preparing for the worst and hoping for the best. So these demonstrations have been happening in various forms for a long time, and a lot of people don't feel like the dial has moved at all, especially since 2016. And so people are very hopeful that moving forward, that their message is going to be received, but they're not really seeing a lot of change. You know, we've seen a lot of peaceful protests over the years, and people have lost their jobs over peaceful protests. People have been banned from sports associations because of protests. And so some people feel like this is the only way for them to be heard, for things to get a little more loud. And some people feel more volatile.
Well, after the sun went down over the weekend, the mood definitely changed. In Tampa, there were at least 40 businesses were torched. There were reports of outside people, or whether they're local homegrown people who are just looking for an outlet for their frustration. Did you see anybody who looked like, I don't know, they didn't belong, or they were just trying to agitate and trying to provoke the police, that sort of thing?
It's really hard to vet that. It's hard to know whether somebody is infiltrating as a white supremacist. It's hard to know if somebody is an opportunist who is just taking advantage of the current climate in order to vandalize and graffiti and cause issues, or whether it's people on, you know, the other end of the spectrum that are, you know, legitimate protesters who feel like this is the only way for them to be heard. A lot of the rights that we have in various aspects are rooted in rioting and in more violent forms of protest. It's how civil rights got started, women's right to vote.
Well, protests, as we know, are as American as apple pie. It goes back to the founding of this republic. The violence that happened afterwards, I know a lot of people are going to try to play that up, but let's stick to the underlying message that these people are trying to get across. Did you feel a message of hopefulness, or maybe of people shrugging their shoulders saying things will never change, this is the way it's always been?
People seem to be hopeful that this would make a difference because it has made a difference in the past. I mean, racism is something that we've been battling for a very long time. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be anything that goes away anytime soon. But change has been made, that we have made baby steps forward in terms of rights for various vulnerable populations. And so people are hopeful that now is the time for that to happen again. And so I did sense a lot of hopefulness from people. And there was a lot, you know, it was a serious march and people were sad and frustrated. And there was some yelling at police officers and angry chanting. But people were also laughing and enjoying each other's company and supporting one another and helping people that got sick in the heat and, you know, and fanning each other and handing out water bottles.
All right. We'll hope that something good comes out of all this. Delina Miller is a multimedia reporter for WUSF. Thanks for being out there and thanks for being on Florida Matters, Delina.
Thanks for your time, Steve.
And that's it for today's show. I'd like to thank Brian Butler and Delina Miller and all of the people who are trying to peacefully make a change. You can see some of Delina's photos of the protests and the words of the people taking part on our website, WUSFnews.org. I'm Steve Newborn. Thanks for listening.